So much of society seems so quick to anger these days. Annoyance, injustice, or the seeming absurdity of our opponent's anger can make us angry. We may not want to consider it, but could even our anger be connected to love? In this episode of the Fabric Podcast, Greg Meyer explores the surprising force that anger can be for love.
Anger, rage, fury, wrath, negative words in our culture. We aren't supposed to feel these, but we do. And that's a problem because anger seems to be a fundamental human emotion. And I cannot not be human, yet somehow I'm supposed to not do this thing that humans do, which is feel that stuff. This week, in our quest of rescuing love from its wonderful but whimsical romantic corner that it's been stuck in, and to use it to transform our world to one that sees no strangers, we're going to take a look at that emotion. We're going to be looking at anger. We've been talking No Strangers for the past several weeks, taking cues from Valerie Kaur and her book, See No Stranger, and other places that we find the heart of God shining through the cracks and crevices of our world, exploring how wonder is the wellspring of love and grief is the price of love, and how love can't be separated from them. Today, I want you to reach inside yourself to that place where anger wells up and know the side of anger that is also inseparable from love, because anger is what protects that which we love. Is anger a part of love for you? Or do you see anger and love as opposed to one another? A choice you have to make between being angry or being loving. Listen to this short excerpt from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech that he delivered from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial 56 years ago, and listen for what is in his heart as he spoke these words.
I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream. With its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. Yeah. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
What did you hear? I heard vision. I heard hope. I heard determination. I heard love for his country and for his children and the children of his neighbors of all races. And I heard anger. I think I'd call it rage, not raw and out of control, but rage that knew its purpose. And its purpose was clear. It was to overcome that which threatened what he loved, what he felt was sacred, true, and viable. In those words of Martin Luther King's, we see the key to anger. Anger that builds instead of destroys. And it's all summed up in this question. What drives your anger? Your desire to protect that which you love, or your desire to destroy what you hate? To put it more simply, is your anger a servant of love or of hate? You see, anger whose purpose is to protect what it loves can change the world. And anger whose purpose is to hate will tear down the world for all of us. I suppose it's safer just not to get angry, not to risk hating. Is that what was taught to you? If so, you aren't alone. Many people believe anger is just wrong. And because of that, they pretended they don't feel it. They stuffed the feeling down inside. Or else they've let it loose. But thinking that this instinct was wrong, they consider themselves defective and unacceptable to good people. is anger antithetical to love for you? Have you been taught that anger is a sign of the absence of love? If so, listen to King's words and imagine that anger is part of love, a powerful and passionate sign of its presence. You felt it. Whether you thought you should or not, you have been angry for what you believed was a good reason at some point in your life. There has been some injustice, some wrong committed that made your blood boil. Your hands may be clenched, your abdomen, shoulders tensed. What was it? Remember it. Let the story play out in your mind. What did you do? Did you lash out? Did you shame yourself for feeling that anger? Did you ignore it until you forgot about it? What did you do with it? If anger is part of love, if it is something powerful and passionate that springs up to protect what we love, then we must admit it, allow it space within us. Now, if you've spent your life telling yourself you shouldn't be angry, it can take time to notice it or to not recoil from it. If you've allowed yourself to give in to anger and to let it lash out in hate, that too takes time to check. In both cases, the question shouldn't be, is it wrong to be angry or not, but what drives my anger? My desire to protect what I love or to destroy what I hate? Sometimes we discover it is love of something, but that something is trivial or selfish. I'm protecting myself from having to share my ice cream cone, or I'm protecting my freedom to do what I want. It's a free country after all, you know. But if the limitations are for the common good, then that anger may be more about what I like than what is right. That tells me it's time to rethink what I really love and what my anger should really be protecting. But if your anger rises up from something that threatens who you or all of us together are, then that anger needs a hearing. As usual, Valerie Kaur hits a nail right on the head. Here she is speaking on January 6th, the day of the siege on our nation's capital.
If you feel this rage in the face of oppression, in the face of cruelty, in the face of injustice, in the face of ongoing assaults on our democracy and our safety, on our dignity, it's okay, my loves. It's okay to let yourself feel it. Let yourself cry. Let yourself scream. Let yourself wail. For the rage that we are experiencing in the face of this kind of injustice, I call divine rage. Divine rage. It is the rage flashing in the eyes of Jesus when he overturned the tables of the money lenders in the temple. It is the rage of Kali, the Hindu goddess who battled demons in order to protect us. It is the rage in Guru Gobind Singh Ji's eyes, the 10th Sikh Guru, when he stood up to the oppression of empire. You see, the aim of divine rage is not vengeance. The aim of divine rage is to reorder the world.
Divine rage. Not to seek vengeance, but to reorder the world. That's what we're talking about. A revolutionary love. Love that can cause a revolution of human hearts and of human systems. Of our relationships with ourselves and with one another and with the world itself. This change that must happen, it will not take place until we are angry enough with how it isn't happening, with how what we love most dearly is threatened by the way things are. And it doesn't make me a prophet to say to you that what we love most is threatened today. The divine rage which Valerie Kaur speaks of and points to her Sikh faith and to Jesus for examples of is definitely part of the Judeo-Christian wisdom, even though it has often been tamed out of it, leaving love toothless and weak. In fact, until I realized what God was protecting in those wrathful stories and prophetic passages of the Old Testament, I didn't know what to do with them. How can God be loving and burn hot with anger, as it often reads? It is because something precious is at stake, something at the heart of creation and of us and of you. Listen to these few lines from the prophet Amos, in which he takes on the voice of Yahweh, I am who I am, the name of God in these passages. Listen for divine rage in these words, which are often read far too sedately.
That's it! Enough! I will not let this pass by unnoticed. Be silent. Hear this, you who trample the needy, bring ruin to the poor of our land, saying, when will the markets be open again so that we can make more money? When will the weekend be over so that we can sell more? Skewing the deals in our favor, skimping on what they get for their money? Suckers! We buy the poor with pocket change. We trade the needy for a pair of sneakers. We even make them pay for the leftovers that are of no use to us. I swear by everything good that our people have stood for, that I will never forget what you are doing. Your world shall not be left unshaken.
Okay. I adapted the translation to speak 21st century rather than 7th century BC, but while I updated a few nouns and examples, I did not change the verbs or emotion. Anger and consequences are clear here, and so is the subject of that anger. This is not about Yahweh hating anything. It is about the heart of Yahweh. God loves everyone, including the poor and the needy, and will protect them from greed and oppression. Valerie Kaur already showed us Jesus' rage with the money changers at the temple in Jerusalem, but I don't know if we often realize how fierce the good shepherd could be against the wolves that prey upon those whom he protects. Let me walk you through another story that is less familiar. This story takes place after a number of confrontations with the religious leaders of his day over Jesus' disregard of Jewish laws in favor of actually caring for people, particularly observing the Sabbath and not doing anything that might be seen as work on it. We'll pick it up there. Jesus entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. The Pharisees watched him to see whether he would cure the man on the Sabbath so they could accuse him. And Jesus said to the man who had the withered hand, "Come forward." Then he said to the Pharisees, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. Now, here's a big line after the Pharisees kind of were covering themselves. Jesus looked around at them with anger. Note here, Jesus was furious that they would worry more about, think that God would worry more about this rule about the Sabbath than about this man who suffered. But he wasn't only angry. The story goes on. And he was grieved at their hardness of heart. Grief, the price of love. Grief and anger often blend when born of love. Jesus was angry at the choices of these religious power withholders, but he was also heartbroken at their inability to see the love the God they meant to serve had for this man and had for them too. The story continues. And Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. Nice touch here, Jesus. I mean, the man was healed, but Jesus didn't actually do anything except ask the man to stretch out his hand, so he really didn't break the Sabbath. But the Pharisees' minds, they were made up. Their hearts were hardened. And the story continues. The Pharisees went out and immediately conspired with Herodians against him, how to destroy him. The battle continues, the battle between the hate of injustice bent on destroying and the divine anger determined to love. Anger can serve love. The early followers of Jesus got it. I don't know where we lost it. In a letter to a people struggling to follow Jesus' teaching in a diverse world, we find these words. "So then, putting away falsehood, let us all speak the truth to our neighbors, for we are members of one another." Wow, that seems to have a little overlap with seeing no one as stranger, huh? And it goes on, "Be angry, but do not sin." Okay, so we have permission here. We can be angry. And then it goes on, "but do not sin." What's that all about? Now, you got to remember, sin, we think about sin as a thing. When you do something wrong, that was a sin that you did. No. Sin isn't a thing. Sin is a condition. It's separation from ourselves, from God, from the world, from other people, all right? So be angry, but do not let that break you from creation, break you from yourself, break you from others. Don't let your anger be used to destroy, but to build up. And then after that, we find this often repeated phrase today. You may have wondered where it came from. Well, here's where it came from. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. No, it does not say make your anger go down like the sun. No, it's not saying you have to suppress it. It's saying you have to Deal with it. Don't let it build up. Don't suppress it. And then it finishes with this line, and do not give an opportunity to the devil. Do not let the sun go down in your anger, and do not give an opportunity to the devil. Okay, again, our heads track to this guy with the pitchfork and the long tail and the horns all red, the devil. No, just this is the word diabolos, slander, accuser. Don't give it an opportunity to that which is caustic to itself to have a foothold in your life that breaks you from the world, from the self that God intends to create. You may remember Don't Feed the Animals back in the fall. We spent 4 or 5 weeks on that. We were talking about the emotions we all have their place on the bus of our lives. But that place is never the driver's seat, because when they take that seat and they really like to, it isn't pretty. Anger's like that. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a place for those things on the bus. So your anger, like the Bible says, be angry. But, well, one but is this. Don't suppress it. When anger is kindled inside you and you refuse to acknowledge it and you stuff it away, it doesn't go away. It just builds up inside you. And one of two things happens. You've experienced these both. I know, I sure have. First, it can build up until it explodes all over others. People who maybe have nothing to do with it. They just held a match too close to the fuse and that they didn't know was there. Ever blow up at your kids or someone at work, someone you love, and you didn't know why, didn't mean to hurt them? Or it can build up until it implodes all over your inner self. Stuffing all that anger you think you're not supposed to have inside of you can fill you with shame. Or if you stuff it away out of fear, hoping that you could just forget about it, it can fill you with a sense of worthlessness for never doing anything about all the wrong that you've witnessed. Remember, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't suppress it. Another be angry but is be angry but don't unleash it. That's feeding the animal, letting it drive the bus. Unleashed anger attacks what it hates. It doesn't defend what it loves. And when it does that, it becomes what it hates. It destroys the world it wants. That person who could so easily be the target of your hate is not a stranger. He or she is your uncle, your auntie, your sister, brother, friend, or neighbor. Part of yourself you do not know yet. Okay, so what is the alternative? Be angry, but don't suppress it, don't unleash it. Listen to it. Your anger is there for a reason. It is telling you something, something about something you love, something precious to you. It is letting you know that you must do something. Your anger has important information for you. Let that information inform your love, not drive it. And that takes self-control. Self-control needs practice. It takes support, accountability, learning from others. Don't mistake this self-control with suppression. This is channeling, directing our anger, not stopping it, not hiding it, not stuffing it. Anger, you see, is born of love. And its purpose is to move us, to motivate us, to defend what we love against all odds. But sometimes we are powerless to effect a change to protect our beloved. What then? Kelly Plago has been with us each week of No Strangers, sharing what her life has gleaned about this path of revolutionary love. Listen to her story that I would claim as being a portrayal of the work of anger born of love at work within her.
I met my husband, Felix, in 2004. My friend Christy and I used to go out every week salsa dancing on Thursday nights at First Avenue. One night, Felix asked me to dance, and I said yes. And we danced and enjoyed each other, and at one point, he pulled his body away so that we could look at each other in the eyes, and he smiled at me, and I was smitten. I think I fell in love with him right then and there, but to be sure, I didn't know it until months later We would meet up every week at First Avenue and dance, and he was so respectful. And I could see that he was very much admired and respected by people in the salsa dancing community and his friends. And eventually we became boyfriend and girlfriend. We dated for about a year. He helped me change things in my life, like drinking, partying, poor decisions. He played a big role in getting me to turn those things around. And at the end of our year of dating, I think we would both say that we were ready to get married, but there was a big obstacle in the way, which is that I moved to Guatemala to start Salus, which I've also talked about. So on the day that I left, September 5th of 2006, he took me to the airport. We cried. He told me he wished I didn't have to go, but he understood and wished me well. And at that point, we didn't know what was going to happen to our relationship. It was not decided. So I got on the airplane and I went to Guatemala, and he stayed here. Over the next few weeks, we had lots of talks over the phone, and he told me one day that he had decided he was going to wait for me. And now, his decision to wait for me was based on the idea that I was going to be gone for 3 to 5 years. I was thrilled because it's what I wanted, but I would never have asked him to do that for me. So we had a long-distance relationship, and I came home a couple times during that period, but he couldn't come visit me because he couldn't leave the country, the USA. The reason for that is because Felix is in this country, undocumented. So he spent 15 months in a long-distance relationship, and I cut my time short in Guatemala because I was ahead of schedule. The ministry was in a place where it was ready to let me leave, and I was thrilled about that. And so I came home in December of 2006, and in April of 2007, we got married. So just like the majority of everyone I've ever spoken with about immigration and undocumented people marrying citizens, we thought that after we got married, we would just be able to pay a lawyer to file paperwork for us and he could get legal. The truth is, it's not that simple. Instead, we learned that through consults with lawyers, lawyer number one, lawyer number two, lawyer number three, there is not a pathway for Felix. And I don't know what your reaction is listening to that news, but for me, it makes me very angry. I'm angry that my country, that's mine, would tell my husband, whom I love and cherish, that he is not welcome here. I'm angry about it because I love him and I want to protect him and I don't want him to hurt. And I know that being made to feel like you're not welcome anywhere hurts deeply. So what do? Riot, protest, be angry, get it out of our system, yell, argue, fight. I guess I'm not built, I'm not wired to go down that path. Instead, I learned about an organization that is made up of almost, at least represents like 2 million families that are in our same situation. And I have volunteered with them. I have lobbied in Washington, D.C. with them, basically fighting to make sure that we can get a pathway for Felix and other immigrant spouses like him who don't have a pathway. This group is American Families United, and I'm sure if you and I are friends on Facebook, you've seen a lot about them. Next year, I'm going to be their president and serve in that way. But it's this anger, it's this love, it's this protective, defensive instinct that's in me, that's fueled by the anger, that compels me to do the work, to lobby, to be calm and rational and responsible, and insist that my rights are recognized, that Felix's rights are recognized, and continue to fight until that becomes a reality.
Once again, I want to thank Callie for showing up in the world and in this podcast, bringing the ideas that I'm talking about to real life. She's channeled her anger to an unjust and hurtful system to advocate for change, and so far she has not prevailed, yet she persists, angry and grieved by the hardness of hearts that she encounters. But she persists, perhaps because her anger and the action that grows out of it is so clearly anchored in her love. And not only in her own personal love, but she has linked her love with the love that millions of other families have for one another. There's power in that. She's listened and channeled her anger, but what she didn't tell you is what she does when she isn't in the office of some congressperson. When the energy of that rage fills her and makes her want to cry and lash out at the selfishness and cruelty of those who support a system that endangers her love. What do you do when you feel like you are caught up in the energy of that love? How do you harness the power of your anger so that you aren't swept away by it? Valerie Kaur speaks of finding a safe container for our rage. What is that container for you? Do you have friends who understand and let you rail and rant? We put up a boxing bag in our kids' bedroom at one point to help them with that. Running is a physical release for me, letting a lot of pent-up energy work its way through me constructively, converting it into thoughts and ideas and plans and hope. The psalm writers of the Old Testament spoke of going out and standing under the stars and crying out. Maybe you journal, you write poetry, you write music, you dance, you shout, you chop firewood. I don't care. Just find a way to let it out. Because if you don't, prepare to not be able to control its energy. Find your safe container. Practice using it. Remember, practice when it's easy so you know how to use it when it's not. And use others. You are not alone in your anger. We all share anger over injustice, whether it's in our lives or whether we see it in the lives of others. We need each other to navigate these waters. And remember, we are members of one another. Anger is not the same as love, but it's not the opposite of it either. It is part of what makes love revolutionary. How can you not feel some anger at the injustice and the cruelty, the oppression so many people suffer in our world today? And if you do and are not finding a way to act on it, my question is, what are you doing with that anger? Where are you hiding it? The reason you feel it is that people whom you are part of need your anger, motivated love, to be at work to bring justice, to end cruelty and oppression. And you can't hold that inside you without it destroying you. The emotion and the moral costs are too great. You won't defeat all the forces of evil in the world, and you won't even show up everywhere you ought to, but your voice can be heard, and you can do something. You are not called to be perfect. You are called to show up. Talking with Callie, she reminded me of a few lines that we have often used with Fabric. They fit well here. I am only one person, but I am one person. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And I won't let what I can't do keep me from doing what I can do. So be angry. Do something. Take your anger and protect what you love. Reorder the world to be more the shape of the beloved community, the kingdom of heaven, the place where our children are not judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, where the lion will lie down with the lamb, where there is no stranger. So, some practice for this week. Practice being angry. Yeah, kind of sounds fun, actually. It's pretty safe to say that something will anger me this week. I imagine something will anger you too. You may be so good at suppressing it that it will take you a while to recognize it. You might just think you're annoyed or bothered or frustrated, but those might simply be the kosher terms that you've adopted for the rage that wants to rise up in you. When you feel it, it will be easy to identify the person or the people behind the system that awaken your anger. People you do not want to know, people whom you feel deserve your disrespect, even your hate. Turn your gaze away from that easy target and instead look to what you love. Focus there. What is it that is so precious to you that such anger would rise up to protect it? Remember, this is the purpose of your anger, not the destruction of some other. With that clearly in mind, look back at that person your anger is directed at and see their humanity. See them as part of yourself you do not yet know. A person like you who is trying to make sense of the world, who also prefers joy to fear, who seeks peace, not turmoil, who is imperfect and battling their own wounds and baggage. And then put that anger to work. Channel it to right what is wrong, to protect your beloved and the humanity of your opponent. Revolutionary love reorders the world to one with no strangers.
Thanks for listening. This conversation gets richer as we share it with people in our own lives. Find discussion resources and ways to connect on our website, fabricmpls.com. See, Fabric isn't trying to find and teach the right ideas, but to help us weave our lives together deeply toward wholeness and interconnectedness with each other and the very fabric of the universe, which sounds a lot like revolutionary love.